Good morning and welcome to America's Web Radio. It's time for Medicine on Call with Dr. Elena George. And Dr. George had a bit of an emergency today, a little operation there. So we're doing this on the phone, and she's got a great guest coming on later. So, Dr. George, how are you this morning?
I'm fine, Dave. I'm sorry I'm not there in the studio with you, but thank goodness there's technology works, right?
Well, as long as somebody bigger than us doesn't interfere with an electrical. We had a lot of lightning and thundering, and no rain. It was weird.
It's true.
But
yeah, I heard it in the OR, too. But thank goodness we're together. I have Dr. Anthony Ferrara, who's a guest today on my show. He might have been stuck in traffic or also affected by technology issues. So we're just waiting for him to call in. But, you know, what we talked about last week, this is kind of an extension of what we talked about last week, where under the new guidelines, under the mandates coming under Obamacare, in my opinion, and I know that I'm not alone at this point, I've talked to enough docs to know that we're moving towards a two-tier system. I didn't think it was going to be this quick that it came to pass, but there's a huge difference in the delivery of health care, depending on where you decide to get it. Now, there's a huge push towards centralizing health care. We know that government is centralizing it. We know that the hospitals, I don't care what state you're in, I'm sure you've seen hospitals going out of business, hospitals buying smaller community hospitals and becoming centers. There's been a super specialty in some hospitals. Some just do orthopedics. There's always been children hospitals, but we're talking about heart centers, stroke centers. I mean, this is like a super specialty of care. And when you think about how Obamacare is written, everybody's angling to get their piece of the pie. And I think the common denominator of this is it's about the bigger you are, the more power you have, and the more impetus you have to get rid of your competition. And competition is always a problem for corporations. They don't want the little person. They don't want the cheaper, better version, because when you compare the two, people are going to vote with their pocketbook and with their feet. So if you take the competition out, then there's nothing you have to worry about. You can be as big as you want. You can do whatever you like. People have nowhere to go. And basically that seems to be what's happening now with medicine. I don't know if Dr. Ferrara has joined us yet.
Yeah, I believe he has.
I'm here.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Welcome. I was just giving a preview or preamble of your appearance today on the show, because we were talking about how healthcare has become a corporate entity and how the bigger you are, the more power you've amassed and you want to just stomp out the competition. Now, everybody can relate to going to an emergency room, because that's exactly where a lot of people without health insurance get their healthcare. And God forbid you have to go, but you'll be just floored by the cost associated with going to the ER. Just walking in the door is at minimum about $250. Then you start adding on tests, consultations, any kind of medications, and you can easily be socked with thousands of dollars for maybe 15, 20 minutes worth of work and maybe 5 or 6 hours worth of waiting. And I had Dr. Ferrara on my show today because I want people to understand that there is a difference in quality depending on where you go. We talked about hospitals, but urgent cares are now, in my opinion, state-of-the-art health delivery systems where you get what you pay for. Actually, you get more than what you pay for, especially with Dr. Ferrara's North Atlanta urgent care. And when you go to these places, what you're getting is top-notch doctors, board-certified emergency medicine physicians, not PAs, not nurse practitioners, who actually understand emergency medicine, but are business people as well. So you don't have to worry about their customer service, because their goal is to make you happy, not just to make you healthy, but to make you happy. And that's where that's the disconnect, in my opinion, in medicine right now. There's no customer service. There's no attention to detail. It's basically a cost center for most of these places. So if you don't like it, tough. So we talk about this a lot on our show, Dr. Ferrara, where people now have to start taking control of their health. where they stop, need to stop just settling and now start voting with their pocketbooks. If you don't like an experience in a physician's office or a hospital, then you need to go elsewhere and start really shopping around. So with that preamble, if you can just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended up opening your facility.
Well, first of all, good morning, Elaine, Dr. George. Thank you for having me on the show. My background and our background of our physicians, we're all emergency room physicians. We were did a residency in emergency medicine at Fort Hood, Texas. I did it with U.S. Army. Was in the Army for a while and then left the Army and practiced emergency medicine for quite a while. And actually, I've been doing emergency medicine now for over about 25 years. And about 10 years ago, and actually another emergency physician, his name is Dr. Mark Winoko, actually owns the urgent care also. He took me outside, and I remember it was in the middle of a busy ER evening, and just typical, as ER where sees about 80,000 patients a year. That's a huge volume. He takes me outside right in the middle of his visit, and we go to the ambulance deck, and we're sitting out there. I remember the sun was going down. He goes, "Anthony, are you proud of the care you're giving?" And this guy's that director. I said, "Well, you're thinking what I'm thinking. No, I'm not." And he goes, "We got to be able to, there's got to be something better and be able to deliver the care." And what we realized is that we discussed, whether, you know, we were in our positions. We were at the front lines. We were not part of care. And he and I had been working together at that point for 10 years or so, and we had sort of, I go to the other doctors, we were banging our head against the wall about somebody listening to us, how to make things better. I think when you said, you're right, you're just a number, they don't care. You see the waiting lines that are 4 or 5 hours deep, and you go to the people higher up, and you say, "Hey, I think this is what we need to do. We're working there. These are some ideas." And the ideas were never listened to, and of course, you know, they would have these complaint satisfaction scores low. They would hire consultants. Here we are, we get the front lines, and they hire people who didn't even work there. And they come up with almost the same suggestions we do, or some other suggestions I remember kind of dumb. I remember once was, if you put a sign in every room saying, "Have we got a great job today?" or change the emergency waiting room, take out the word emergency, put it, family lounge area or something, somehow things will get better. But never, the suggestion is never, how can we make it better for the patient? It was never that. It was frustrating for us. And then finally, after banging against the wall, it's basically told us, "Look, if you don't like it, go somewhere else. You know, this is the way it's going to be." Mm-hmm. And what's ironic is always people were non-physicians who are trying to run how we do, how we run, how we take care of patients. And the concept was very easy. What we're saying was, look, just if you have more people, we need more doctors, we need more staff, we need more nurses per bed, we need more MA techs per bed, we need more radiology techs. If we have that, there will be no waste. And it was a very simple solution. And somehow, they never follow, no matter how many times you tell them. And then they wouldn't listen to us, but they would listen to stupid suggestions from what I call outside consultants. And I remember one time telling the CEO of the hospital, saying, "Look, you're supposed to be running this hospital. You own this. I'm supposed to know everything there is to know. If I need to hire somebody else to tell me what's going on in my hospital because I don't know, then it's time for me not to be there." Obviously, they didn't like that comment. But it's true. But it was true. If you don't know what's going on in your place, you need a consultant, you're not doing your job. Then we decided that Mark Winoko did go on with urgent care, and I did too. And I did it with those principles, staffing and giving quality care and actually doing everything you can about how to take care of the patient, actually, you know, caring about the patient, about their waiting times and their illness and all that. Mm-hmm. And it's almost the way I look at it. And we grew. We started out, another two parties, Dr. Roel Radon in another department of Dr. Andy Van Horn, excellent ER physicians, again, had the same philosophies as I did. And we actually put everything on the line. We bought a building. We found a location in an area like Atlanta, called the Cocoa Hills area, Emory area. We got an old building, and we literally gutted it out and built what we thought was going to be an urgent care and make it actually look different, very nice. And we put everything we had. And when we signed on the loan, I remember telling my partners, saying, "Do you realize we're going to be jumping out of a plane without a parachute, and we better learn to land and fly, you know, learn to fly before we land, because this is how much of a risk at the time it was." And we started out just ourselves, literally doing everything. We hired some good hirees, thank God, they were great staff. And we went to the concert that nobody waits. Everybody can be brought back fast. Everybody, we did some things that were totally outside the box as far as getting patients faster. For example, one was like no checkout. When you go to a doctor's office, you know, they make you, and this is what's supposed to be done, they tell you. You know, you see the doctor and they check off some paper sheet with all your charges. Then you go up front and you end up waiting another whatever amount of time. Then you leave, and this is what the ER was. I remember discharging patients, and literally, I'm not even talking, 2 hours later, patients were still waiting to be discharged. That was ridiculous. You know, when you see a doctor, I want to say goodbye, he feel better, and you're gone, they're out the door. That's what patients like. Mm-hmm. And we started out with no weights, because that's when we build it up. And I remember my partners and I literally went without pay as we built up the practice for 2 years. We still kept our outside jobs. And basically, we worked hard, like you were saying earlier. You got to take care of every patient. You got to give them the experience when they come back. And our patients did come back, and now we have a high volume. And as we grew, we kept those principles about no patients not waiting. We staffed it like we thought it should be staffed. And patients who came in on day one and waited 10, 15 minutes, now 5 years later, with a volume that's right now we think beyond our capacity, still waiting only 10, 15 minutes. How do we do that? And the way we staff it better. So when we have volume grew, we added an extra doctor, when extra MAs, extra radiology tech, extra front staff. It's almost like I like to say, when you go to Chick-fil-A, I remember going through the drive-thru, there was a long line. Guess what? The manager came out and started taking orders. They opened up a second line, and they opened up more cashiers inside. And so that Chick-fil-A does not make you seize those cars and seize that line. It doesn't make you wait. It doesn't care. It says, well, you're going to wait three hours. You're going to wait anyway and get a sandwich. And like you said, patients and people walk with your pocketbooks, which I also like to add, patients also, you know, this corporate medicine, patients also, doctors are still doctors. Mm-hmm. Patients will go back if they like the doctor. They got good care, despite the price. You can have all the fancy billboards you want to, all the fancy waiting rooms, but if they don't like the doctor, the doctor's not doing a good job, they're not going to come back. And so we staff the state, well, as we grew now, we're up to 12 doctors. Now, nine partners. We hired very good emergency medicine, emergency trained board certified. We easily could have gone, I call it corporate, and tried to save money, hired a nurse practitioner, physician assistant, which I think do a great job. But our patients are paying us for to see a doctor. When they come in, they say, good morning, I'd like to see a doctor. To me, that's not just in my ears. They're paying to see me. To see my partners. And so we kept that promise. So, yeah, we're not making the huge profits. You know, the corporate things we're making, corporations, but we are trying to deliver good care every time. And that's what's been the bottom line. And if it's been taken away from, our profit, then let it be it, because the bottom line is, taking care of the patients. And patients have noticed that. We now have two other centers we open, and we give the same principles. And we've had competition that has come in, and I remember one coming in and said, we have Starbucks coffee in our waiting room. And then walks to our rooms, and she says, oh, we have flat screen TVs in every room, and this and that. And my answer was, you know what, if our patients have time to drink coffee or Starbucks in the waiting room, then I'm not doing my job. If they have time to watch TV or read a magazine in the room, then I'm not doing my job. And that's our philosophy. Like, as we grew, I was telling you that we grew beyond capacity. Well, son, we didn't think of ourselves was going to be that big, so we didn't build the same rooms as we should have in retrospect. So we had to come up with out-of-the-box things to make keep things faster, almost like having double screens for the sign-in, which shaved off about 1 minute off the visit. But to us, that was big. But the other big thing they instituted was scribes. We were all computerized EMR system, and we, in order to, again, to be fast, we had to come up with our own electronic charting system because the commercial out there were not fast enough. Mm-hmm. And we succeeded. But on top of that, I noticed that doctors were spending an average of about 2 hours charting or staying later. So what we do is we have scribes. We have somebody who follows. We hired medical students or college students who follow the doctor around and do the chart and note for the doctor. And then as I'm talking to the patient and I'm saying, hey, Mrs. Jones, I think you have strep throat. Here's, I'm going to give you amoxicillin and give you information sheet, amoxicillin and strep throat. As I'm talking, I can hear the printer going off. And as I'm in the room, my scribe leaves the room and hands me my prescription discharge instructions, and I hand it to the patient. And the patient's like, wow, it was that
That's
fast.
Impressive.
And then I move to the next room and the next room. And that has kept our waiting times to 10 minutes. I mean, the biggest, what was it? There was a patient who sees one of the top internists, a brilliant doctor at Piedmont. And she said, you know, that's why I love my doctor, but with you, I can be seen faster than I can park at Piedmont Hospital. I can be in and out, get great care faster than I can park, and doesn't cost me anything for parking. And I said, you know what? You're right. I can see you faster than you can park. I think in those decks, one of those hospitals, I think multiple decks, you have to go through the, you know, through the campus. They get great care. That hospital, you know, is in their private doctor's office, but, it, you know, parking, it takes half hour to park when you can be seen in and out or whatever. As far as our cost, one of the things we did that we was different, radical than anything else, was what I called taking away the nickel and diming of medicine. You know, when you go to a hospital bill, you talk about exhaustion bill. First of all, to walk in a hospital, you said it's $200 just to walk in. It's actually the average just to walk in, $600 just to walk into an ER. That's the minimum charge. That's without the ER physician charge. That's without the extra stuff. And when you go in there, and all your listeners can certainly appreciate trying to figure out you know, a medical bill. I think there should be companies that should help you decipher this much perfect, this plaster roll and this roll and the aspirin, the Tylenol, or the strep test or the chest x-ray. And then you have the radiologist leading the charge on top of that. To me, I call nickel and diming. So I said, why does it have to be that way? Or my other thing was, like, you see a patient the first visit and it's a higher charge, and then Medicare, which actually is a government, it's like the second time, insurance companies, the second time, well, for the same patient, same complaint, you get paid half. And to me, when you know, the emergency medicine, we never, it's always one price. When I saw that going outside in quarter sorting price practice, I was appalled by that. I said, wait a minute, this is me. I'm the same doctor, same patient. Why am I getting paid less for the second time or third time? I mean, to me, it's ridiculous. So I went with the insurance company. I said, look, why don't we come out with something that's fair to you and me? The same price every time. And it's one price covers all, meaning you come into my clinic, and the average price is $130, depends on the insurance, maybe give it a dollar more, a dollar less. But let's say it's $130. And if you come in for a pink eye, which is a simple, like you said, five-minute visit, it's $130. But you come in next time, and like we had the patient last night with a fractured fibula. Fractures the fibula, which is a broken ankle, essentially. We put an x-ray, we put a splint on, crutches, and we arrange for an appointment with the orthopedic doctor next day to be seen, which no ER will ever do that, first of all. And not only that, but the top orthopedic group in town, all for $130. That same visit in an emergency room, you're looking at about a $4,000 or $5,000 visit as far as the actual cost. Now, what the insurance pays and the patient pays, I do not know, but that's the bill you're going to get. Think about that, $130 versus $5,000. And the gentleman was in and out under 40 minutes. He had two children with him, his two sons. Now imagine him going to the emergency room 4 or 5 hours with two kids on top. This was around 7 o'clock in the evening. And you have to look at the waiting factor, too. So that's when we come up with one price, and patients love that. And it's affordable. If somebody has a high insurance cost, have a high deductible, and you go in and you say you have $2,000 deductible, and you got to pay out of your pocket, all of a sudden you got stitches, you got to go to the emergency room, you just that's $2,000 right there up front, which, you know, put on your credit card or whatever. You come to us, it's $130 for your stitches. And you get seen by the same ER doctors, and there's no wait. The same ER doctors that work at all the hospitals.
Let me stop you for a second, Anthony. Well, I want to stop you for 1 second there because I want people to really key in on what you just said. $130 to be seen by a board-certified emergency medicine physician. If you walk into any ER in this city, in any city in this country, the chance of you seeing a board-certified ER doc is kind of small. You'll probably end up with a PA who doesn't do orthopedics, who basically farms it out to the person on call if they have somebody, a specialist on call in their hospital, because that's a problem now, too. A lot of hospital ERs are not covered by ENT or OPSO or GYN. They're basically just kind of catchment centers where you kind of get managed but not really treated. But you're paying top dollar for those visits. So I want people to really understand that there is two levels of medicine. And what Dr. Ferrara just described is the way it should be. It's a fraction of the cost. If the government and I would say doctors too, if we didn't run into the fear wagon of if I don't take insurance and do whatever they say, I won't get a patient, we wouldn't be in this situation. So it doesn't follow that good health care, quality health care has to be exorbitant. I mean, you're just proving that.
But not, and just to follow up, I said what you just said, had a patient who I saw the other night was having palpitations, a young lady, she was, when she was walking, she was getting short of breath and kept feeling faint. Gave her fluids, got her to the hospital, and when she got there, I called her the next day. I said, how was it? She said, well, I'm still feeling the same. I said, I waited, first of all, 4 hours, and I never saw the doctor. I ended up seeing a physician assistant, and they checked me for one thing, which was anemia, but didn't check me for anything else. And I remember, and I wrote down on a piece of paper, said, you should be checked for a blood clot, you should be checked for this, 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 and that. And because they were so busy, she said, that's the reason they overlooked that, because they were trying to get me in and out because they were so busy, and they missed the big picture. So basically, she just had a huge cost. She had high deductible. But then she still hasn't gotten any better, next day, 5-6 hours later. So today, now we're starting over again. So you know what, right in the emergency room, and that high cost, so I'm getting different specialty appointments. For example, I'm getting cardiologists today. And again, she paid for all this money, but yet she's seen by a physician assistant, and there was a lot of rushing. It's not this interaction of talking to the patient and getting to the bottom of what's going on. And that's what I was feeling when I was working in emergency room. I just didn't feel like I was given the best care that I can give because you have so many patients. You're trying to be the best with the numbers you have. And going back to the hospital COs, for whatever their reasons were, never gave me the staffing that I needed to provide that great care. And at Orline Urgent Care, we found that. We have doctors who really want to work for us. And I think, and a lot of urgent cares, hopefully they do follow our path. And there's many opening up throughout the state of Atlanta and around the country, which is good. I think hopefully many people will get to see what urgent care is all about. And granted, I think we're unique in only hiring ER board certified ER physicians, which to us means quality. Because we can see everything. In fact, we get a lot of referrals from other urgent cares because, or the retail clinics, such things as you saw CVS and Walgreens, they have retail clinics. Actually, we get many per day. And the main reason is because they cannot handle everything. And a lot of times before we came along, they had to refer to the emergency room, like the lacerations or seeing the elderly for pneumonias, the fractures, the abscesses, things that were a little bit more acute and they can handle or other urgent cares, like lacerations, their faces, their hands. Some physicians just not equipped to do that or skillful enough. So what they send them to us, which has been good. So that is saying that has helped the community, I feel, for us being there.
Well, I actually want to delve into that statement a little bit more. I don't think people really understand the training of an emergency medicine physician versus family practice versus, for example, a PA. I remember when I went through general surgery, I had to rotate through the emergency medicine service, and it was amazing. I mean, you guys can do any emergency procedure, tracheotomies, cricothyroidotomies, where you have to make an airway emergently. That's an ER doctor purview. It's not, you don't have to call ENT for that if you have an ER doctor who is on staff, for example. And what you described, setting fractures, there's so many people who farm out to the specialist because they don't have the skill level to do that. So just for our listeners, because they really don't understand what that training entails, what does it take to be an ER, trained physician so they understand that?
Well, it's obviously 4 years of medical school, and then you do 4 years of emergency medicine, which includes all these skills and procedures you talked about, but also rotating through other services and learning, for example, the emergency ENT procedures, such as stopping a nosebleed, a posterior bleed, cauterizing a nosebleed, an emergency. That would be an example. But then with doing ENT, I take care of, simple things like swimmer's ear, and an ear infection or an eye infection, or taking care of the eye emergencies, in your specialty. The main thing is what that training is to hone in the skills is to be able to look at a patient either in the waiting room or coming in, and within the first minute or two, be able to determine, hey, this is a life or death situation, where some people might come in and say, oh, I'm just having a little bit of chest pain, hurts when I breathe. Be able to realize, hey, this is MI or not. We approach it like, what is the worst thing this could be? And in doing that, you learn what the worst things can be, but also you have to learn what else it can be. So it just takes a little bit more skills and more knowledge basis, just a little bit more in-depth in seeing all these illnesses. Now, any urgent care is not quick to see what I call emergency, need to be emergency, like a heart attack or a stroke or a severe abdominal pain that might need an emergency CAT scan or head bleed or severe headache. Now, a lot of things we can take care of there. For example, if it's a 30-year-old with a chest pain that, by risk factors doesn't appear to be cardiac, then what we do is we're able to arrange, rather than where most places or a private family practice office would send them to an emergency room, what we do is, we have independent doctors that are independent groups that we'd like to refer to, because I feel like whenever the owners are involved, that's when the best care is given, because that's the best interest we are. In order to work at North Atlanta Urgent Care, you have to be an owner. We are high owners. Only owners have the best interest. So we found cardiology groups, orthopedic groups that have that same philosophy. We found you, the brilliant ENT doctor. We refer, like the chest pain, we'll get into the cardiology, call up and say, hey, I need a stress test. I need an evaluator right now. Again, that studies healthcare dollar cost. They go to the emergency room for a fraction of what they would pay in emergency room. They evaluate their chest pain, somewhere under 30. So we could take care of things. Or if somebody with a headache that, say, I think we can handle, we have, for example, not contracts, but we have partnerships with someone involved just as far as so they can get my patients in right away. I call in, for example, a CAT scan. And I can get one within 5 minutes of call saying, Mrs. Jones right here needs a CAT scan of the brain. I need it done now. And they'll do it. I'll get results back very fast. And if they're a cash patient, we're normally an MRI, if insurance costs, you go to hospital, you go to a hospital center. Think about a CAT scan emergency of the head, it's about $2,000. I think our cost for a cash patient gets to $325. Think about that, $2,000 versus $325. And for insurance, it's also a lot cheaper for somebody with insurance, but they have to go to an outpatient center that we have at a fraction of cost versus what they would have gone to the hospital. So the insurance, at the end of the day, everybody wins out on this. So we can work up things even like appendicitis. We can get the CAT scan, then call the surgeon and directly and say, hey, I have an appendicitis. And we have surgeons that we refer to that trust us. Well, I was going to catch that. I'll say, hey, I have an appendicitis. Sure, Anthony, send him over. Bypassing, again, serving him, call it faster for the patient.
Right.
My favorite story is I tell people, we can see at North Atlanta Urgent Care a kidney stone, have it treated out of pain, have the CAT scan, that results back faster than they can register. Think about this, not walk in, but register in an emergency room. Faster than they can register. I mean, parking, going in, signing in, before the triage nurse even calls them. And we have them treated, CAT scan, and results back to say, yeah, this was a kidney stone. So, again, it's a skill up. They're able to hone in and get the diagnosis faster, I think. It does take, higher skill level to be an emergency physician.
Well, in your opinion, why would it cost the hospital system $2,000 to do a CT versus $300 in the urgent care system. What's your gut feeling of why that differential? The test isn't different. You know, the techs aren't different. The reading isn't different. So why is it such a huge amount of money in one location versus the other?
That's been the age-old question. I still don't know. They always tell you, you know, the answer is always given, I remember, since the 80s and late 70s, is because they have to make up the cost to cover for all those that don't have insurance.
Meaning, oh, please.
That's what the answer has been. In the emergency room, it is national average, about 40 to 50% of patients you will see, you will never get paid. You're getting essentially seen for free. And that's the answer I was gone. I say, why is it? Well, we have to make up for all those that have free care. And the only time I've ever seen that on paper, and actually you can go to our website, www.neuc.net or atlantaurgentcare.com, there should be a video there from the Shepherd Report from Fox News on Shepherd Smith, I believe, from 2008, where they were trying to do the difference between urgent care, sort of what you're doing now, urgent care and emergency rooms. And there is an administrator, which ironically enough, that person is actually one of the advisors on but it's Obamacare, and actually it's one of the health policymakers in Washington. He says the reason urgent cares are sort of competition for the other because they're taking, quote-unquote, paying patients and taking them out of the emergency room where these people, if they were in the emergency room, essentially saying paying full price for the bill, then they're helping pay for all the poor in Atlanta, you know, I say poor, but all those that couldn't pay could not afford it. He actually says that on camera. I think we have that link to a YouTube. That's the only time I've seen confirmation that on the paper. Now, granted, the next day, the hospital system came out, you know, with a statement saying, hey, those were his words, not ours. But that's the closest I've ever seen them saying that. That's the only answer that I can give, because I still don't know. Maybe the building is bigger, they have higher costs, higher electric. I do not know. Maybe the nurses charge more. They have to hire nurses. We don't necessarily have to do that. I don't know why that is the case, other than that's the answer I always done.
I think it's a combination of many things. They have so much overhead. I was in the OR yesterday with a conversation with one of the nurses who left the hospital system and has gone into outpatient medicine because she was so distraught with the fact that she wasn't treating patients either. And you have nurse practitioners, you have nursing techs, you have medicalists. I mean, the layers of people that are involved with one patient, and the people who, this is a hierarchy now where the most senior, the most seasoned in patient care have the least to do with the patients. So now the RNs, which when I was a resident in medical school, those are the people that we interacted with. The LPNs, licensed practical nurses, they're not doing any patient care at all. They're doing case management, where they're talking about how the hospital gets paid and how you have to document, and you didn't admit the patient with the right designation. That's what they're doing. And you have nursing techs, maybe 6 months, 9 months of training, who are on the front line of the patient care. So if you have to support that many people in a system to make it run, then I guess it has to be more expensive. Then I guess, you know, I'm a little bit less PC than you are. I'm going to say that the CEOs make a ton of money, and you have to pay their salaries as well. And the fact that they use that argument that they're seeing indigent people for free is the farthest thing from the truth, because they are able to access a pot of money from the government to take care of the indigent. So they're actually double-dipping. So they're crying poor, but they're making out like bandits. The hospital that I'm on staff at built new centers, new wings, there's 50 flat-screen TVs in the OR, so I doubt that they're really scraping the bottom in terms of poverty.
Yeah, I don't know. I never figured that one out, other than at the end of the day, the places I worked at, I noticed that the CEO salary is always linked to how much money they saved or they made. So he has an incentive, but also that... And I would say, I need more nurses, or we need more doctors. And so we never have money. Then at the end of the day, we look at the report, There was literally not a $1 million, not a $2 million, not a $3 million, but a $30, $40 million, even these nonprofit hospitals where they were in surplus. You know, the money we were looking for that doctor, we're not talking about $20 million or $30, you know, to double the staff in an emergency room about, you know, $2 million would have done it, would have cut back all the, that's what we're asking for. So I do not know. I never questioned, you know, why the costs were so high. All I was trying to do was, hey, how can you give better care? And banging my head against a wall. And just, I'll give you a story. I had my email address since the 90s. Everybody says, oh, you got such an old email address. And as emails started coming out, you know, to the, about new things were happening in the hospital, you know, they ran out of communications through email. And this is for the last, I can truly say for the last 15 years. And they say, this is what we're going to do now. This is how we're going to do that now. And my answer back, this is the most telling statement. I tell this to everybody. My answer was always, I would look at it and say, okay, this is the x-ray is going to be done this way or this is going to be done this way. My answer was, thank, and again, this is the only time I didn't become PC was, thank you, sir. May I have another one? And then my question was, how does this help patient care? Question mark. Do you realize that in 15 years, a CEO or administrator only bothered to answer that question once? And that was a friend of mine named, who was the ER director, named Sergio Naccarato, another Italian guy. And he says, Antonio, can you please get on the train? The train has left. Stop sending out these emails, return emails. Please stop doing that because you're going to, it jeopardized, quote unquote, our contract with the hospital. And that was the only answer that I ever received. There was never, these emails would come from the CEO. And I said, as I looked at it, and they decide, now how does this help patient care? Or they say, you know, now you have to fill this out. I remember one time, because I still work ER to keep our skills up. We all do. And I remember the middle of this, I think it was somebody trying to get somebody to the cath lab and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to get such and such done, and I turn around, and the nurses are at the desk writing. I said, ladies, we have a patient here. And they go, wait a minute, what time did he come in? What come this? And I walked over, and they were spending more time, and they were more concerned about filling out these check marks and check boxes, because otherwise, this is what the Medicare tied that payment to that in the hospital. If they don't do that, then it's their jobs, or they get reprimanded, or whatever the hospital does. Mm-hmm. And I was like, we still have a patient to take care of. I don't care what time and this and this and this come, because it has nothing to do with patient care. The bottom line is, how do we get this patient upstairs to the, you know, to the ICU or to the operating room or to the cath lab? To me, that's the bottom line. It doesn't matter the checkbox. And then they come up with these things. One of my favorite ones is like, well, you have to have antibiotics on board within 4 hours of the patient that enters emergency for pneumonia, because otherwise, this is how you take. And the biggest question I had is, where did that study come from? Who came up with those 4 hours? You mean somebody who came in 2 hours later? You know, what is that magic number? You know, show me the study, show me the money. And, you know, but yet we're going through all these rigmarole. There's this three-page paperwork that even the doctors got to fill out in the middle of the emergency room. And I'm like, who makes these policies? And, again, when you point that out, I said, how does this help patient care? They couldn't even answer for me. The people who are interested in this policy, you have to nurse a CEO. Nobody had an answer. And I think if the hospitals every day, they have to say, how can we make patient care better? How does this help patient care? I think a lot of the stuff they're doing, they wouldn't be doing. And that was maybe a part of the overhead cost and the timing. So you have to hire an extra nurse just for the paperwork. Another nurse just to supervise that paperwork has to gotten in so they can get paid the extra, whatever, 1% or 2%. Or make sure they have this. It just doesn't make sense that people stop and think and say, let's do what's best for the patient. You know, and that's where we have Northland Urgent Care. That's our every morning we get up and we tell my staff, how can we make things better for the patient? You know,
if medicine actually worked the way that you just described, where it really was patient-centered, then we wouldn't be in this situation. I think you made an excellent argument for going to the independent facility, going to the independent physician, the freestanding urgent care solo practitioner, because we have to get up every day and actually think about, how do I make my patient's experience better? How do I get them better without having them come back 15 times with the same problem? That's what I focus on, just like you. Now, if you think about it from the hospital standpoint, especially under Obamacare, it's about follow the money, right? The fiduciary responsibility of the hospital now is to their board of directors and to stay open. It is not to patient care. And with all of the mandates that are coming through, if you readmit a patient less than 31 days under Medicare guidelines now, you won't be paid for it. And if you keep them in there for 15 days when you have bronchitis versus 7, you won't get paid for the extra, you know, the extra days past the 7th day. So it's no longer really, I mean, they're not even, it's no guise of patient care anymore at this point. It's get them in, get them out, get your money that you're going to get from the government, and everything else has is going to take a back seat. And they're trying to pawn that off as patient-centered. What I want my listeners to be is savvy, just like your patients who come to see you are smart enough to know the system doesn't work if you access it the way it's designed. It's just going to cost you a ton of money, and you may or may not get better. That's really what's happening now in medicine. And nobody's really happy. The doctors who are in that system, I'm sure, aren't really happy. No. Patients have lost respect for doctors because they see us as the reason behind the cost of health care. And unfortunately, as a specialty of physicians in general, we've been silent. And silence is complicity, in my opinion, because we shouldn't have let this happen. We should have stepped out of this and said, my Hippocratic oath comes first. I'm not playing this game. And walk. They can't have health care without us. They're trying their darndest to do it, but they can't do it without us.
That's been for years, you know, where you're right, it is the doctors for not standing up every time these rules came in and they're made for us. And I think that has been, and part of it is our fault as physicians. We never stood up. You know, some CEO says, hey, look, you will do this or mm-hmm. you'll lose your job. And eventually, people what I call the suits, and there's never been, you know, books written about it. We call the suits. I've come in, and I've basically run a hospital, and then with no medical training, no medical background of any kind, and they've done it with the threat is you will get fired, and you not be allowed to work in this hospital. So maybe physicians have been quiet. That's why you know going back to Atlanta urgent care, just urgent cares. We've been doing local costs, but also supporting the community. In our community, if you were to walk through the local high schools that we support, the local churches, or anywhere, and they know us. They know what my name is, the other doctors' names, because mm-hmm. we're out there supporting, despite doing all this. For example, the local high schools around us, we support every sport. We're there when they call us and they say, hey, we're having a 5K run. Can you help us, you know, being first aid? Or the local school needs some support for their fundraisers and things. We've been doing this along throughout our community. And I'm sure I've seen you do the same thing, being out there. You know, we're not going out there with the billboards and everything else, or at Turner Field they have the flashing lights. We're actually going out there and engaging the community. And one of the things we talk about being independent, you know, and the one of our missions that Northland Urgent Care is to make it locally owned. All owners are locally owned. We all live in the community. We have a vested interest. We will not take corporate money. We do not have venture capitalists funding us. We do not have private equity funds. And that's one of the things that in the last 3 or 4 years we've sort of been seeing a trend. I hope urgent cares don't become like that. They were independent like us, and now there's a slew of this, what I call, again, the suits, mm-hmm. non-physicians. In fact, a local hospital administrator just was one of the investors I found out in a local urgent care. This is sort of getting into where you have these people either living in New York, literally traded on Wall Street, literally traded on Wall Street, are coming in. And so I hope that urgent care does not go that way. And like I said, we feel like Northland Urgent Care, besides helping the community, being there and trying to give the best care for that community, is that we're also going to keep locally owned every owner that we're bringing in. Where do you live? You live in the community? Are you a good doctor? Are you your physician? Are you board certified? Yes. You can be part of our group, and you can help deliver the great care. So if any listeners, any questions they might have about us in the background, just again, atlantaurgentcare.com.
think people would do themselves, I mean, we're blessed that you guys are here in Atlanta, and you have two other locations. One is actually right by my office. I'm on Peachtree Street, and that's after hours, correct?
Right, so, yes. It's open from 6 p.m. to 11. That's one of the things a lot of people at Urgent Care, we thought about it. Like, a lot of our patients will come in, and 8 o'clock, you know, we're closed. And they're probably closed because, you know, we have a life, too. But a lot of things happen. A lot of people want to go to the emergency room was in those late hours. So we decided to say, you know, why don't we open up in after hours? So, again, looking at the idea of cost savings, how we can make healthcare cost saving, we came up with a radical idea. There was an orthopedic office that's closed during those hours. But yet they had empty rooms. They were not being used. They had a waiting room, and they had X-ray equipment. Everything that we needed to run in urgent care. So rather than building new clinics and costs, we decided to lease that space at nighttime. Again, lowering costs, and we passed on that cost savings to the patient. We use the same computers, no equipment. And, again, it's been a win-win. Everybody, think about these people who live in the for your listeners don't know, the area we're located, it's an area right in the center of town, so people come from all over Atlanta. But also there's a lot of high-rise buildings, a lot of young people straight out of college with young jobs. They work. And you get home at 6 o'clock. Sometimes you don't have a doctor. Little things like a cold and the flu, a sore throat. I cut myself cutting onions. And we're so convenient from 6 to 11. Again, it's also about convenience. And I think when you have the private independent like you, you can make those adjustments and make better as opposed to a large corporation where it has to go to, you know, the multi-layers you were talking about. That is another huge advantage that we have. Right? We have to make decisions. You know, again, what's better, what's best for patient care? We figured, well, having an after hours. Okay, let's do it. And that from time, start to finish, we were open within 3 months, find the location, and thank God we had Peachtree Orthopedics was willing to let us lease their space. And they've been wonderful to us. And as we ever make that decision, 3 months, imagine a hospital or a large corporation trying to make that decision. No.
Never.
There's no way it could be done. And again, the bottom line is we're saving money for patients. Last night, a 24-year-old cut lip playing soccer, 10 o'clock at night, he has to go work the next day, shows up at 10:01 in our urgent care center at 10:45, he had three stitches on his lip. He was Aetna insurance, $125. He was back in his apartment 5 minutes away. He was like, are you kidding me, Anthony? It's like, I can't believe it. Are you sure y'all want you more money? And I'm out of here 45 minutes. And I was like, you know, this guy was happy. Or I tell you, one of my favorite story of all time, there was a woman with shoulder dislocation. She had this, so I took her back. She was crying, and I put the shoulder back in. And one of the things is that, again, thinking outside the box, you know, if you go to the emergency room, you're paying for that $4,000 shoulder dislocation. You're paying for the X-ray, the radiologist, but also the sedation, the nurse's sedation, the equipment. It doesn't have to be like that. You can do without all that. I use different techniques in putting back the shoulder, which are painless, where you don't need sedation. One of the techniques we use, Dr. Van Horner, and I use called Eskimo technique as kind of catching in. We rotate the scapula. But long story short, the visit, she was a cash patient, was $130. We charged her. And then she was fine. Oh, it feels much better. So I went in the room back to give her discharge instructions. She's crying. I said, oh, what did I do? And I was worried, like, this lady is crying. And she said, you know, she just told me the bill was $130. I don't pay any more. She goes, you don't understand. I'm a single mom. You saw me in less than 30 minutes. And the same thing happened to me a month ago, and I got this $4,000 bill. What am I going to do? I'm a single mom. I got my, you know, I leave my daughter babysitter 6 hours later. Then I got back. I was sedated. I did put my shoulder back in. Did a good job, but she was worried about that $4,000 bill. You just sold me out for $130, and you're not going to charge me anymore. You took care of me. And she was crying. She was so happy. I'll never forget that. But to me, you know, in emergency room, I never got that kind of, oh, gee, for $4,000, thank you for putting my shoulder back in. I was the one charging. It was the hospital billing under my name. That's the irony. The other thing I don't like, you have corporations, the hospitals, or corporations that are literally traded on Wall Street that run emergency rooms, and they're billing under my name. You know, they say, well, if you work in an emergency room, you have to sign this piece of paper saying we can use your name to bill. But you're not allowed, think about this, you're not allowed to see a bank account. And if you ever go into that bank, because you signed the papers in the bank that the money, they open up a bank account in your name, the money has to be transferred to their account, but you never have to look at what money is coming in under your name. And if
wow.
you do, you will get fired. That actually
wow.
is in the contract. And think about this. They're allowed to be saying, you know, we don't have to make all Medicare decisions and everything for you. But then again, if they do any fraud, I'm the one that approved Medicaid and all that.
Oh, wow.
I'm liable. Granted, there's never been issues with fraud. These companies doing fraud. But that is one of the concerns. But think about this. Imagine you work with somebody else and you say, you sign, because, you know, per hospital rules or billing rules, it has to be under that physician's name. You cannot bill under a corporation. It has to be under a physician's name.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, everything that's billed under your name, you cannot see. And you cannot see what's coming in that bank account. You know where it is. You know the bank. You don't have the bank account number. Or the other thing, that's just funny. The thing you sign, you don't have to keep a piece of paper that has that bank account number. You can't even keep it as a copy of it. Isn't
but
that you
can be held accountable. So if,
you can held accountable.
If something's fraudulent, you're the one they're going to come for.
Right, because it's your responsibility,
wow.
and that's part of the contract. It's amazing, you know, how us, again, it's us physicians who would let them do them to us, as
yeah.
emergency physicians especially, where we're willing to work under these conditions and not even bothering to look and say, you realize this is what's happening? But, I mean, this is, again, I blame the doctors for not standing up for themselves and being allowed to be taken advantage of. Because to me, that's what that is being taken advantage of. And so that's what, you know, that's the side of, you know, corporate medicine, things that the patient does not see. And I decide, you know what, life is short, and
mm-hmm.
I need to enjoy it, kind of being the stress. And, you know, thank God, you know, I'm old. I got two grown children, 27, 24-year-old. But one of the things I like is when I see doctors, I look fresh, I look young, and I look at people, they're tired, they're miserable. And,
yeah.
And I ask them, are you happy? I'm not trying to put them down, but many are not. I'm on the American Board of one of the examiners, the American Board of Emergency Medicine, the one who actually gives exams and certifies them. And they do surveys. Do you realize that the 10-year mark, half of board certified ER physicians
mm-hmm.
leave the practice? And
after
the other half, after 10 years, 50% are gone. Now that's been accelerated as the changes are coming. But what's even more significant is that the other 50% that remain are unhappy. And not only that, and the average life, you know, here we are physicians, we're supposed to treat people and prolong life. But
uh-huh.
yet the average age of a ER physician, as far as the mortality, it's under 65 years of age. 65
wow.
years of age. And that's way below the national world average. And
yeah.
I thought to myself, I said, there's got to be a better way where we can still, I mean, all of us got into medicine because we want to take care of patients. All of us did. But we also wanted to enjoy it, and it had to be a better way. And I think with my partners at North Atlanta Urgent Care, we all came together with the same philosophy, hey, let's make a better life for ourselves. We don't have to be rich. We can make enough of a comfortable living, but we know we're never going to be rich. If we wanted to be rich, I'd still be working in the ER. I'd be making literally three times more than I'm making now. But that's not the bottom line. The bottom line, we want to enjoy what we went into medicine for, taking care of patients. And that's what we're doing at North Atlanta Urgent Care. And at the same time, giving back to the community. I mean,
yeah.
it's nice when you go to a community event and you're putting out fake splints for the kids at the fair and seeing the smile on their faces.
Mm-hmm.
Or doing a, you know, helping out with a community, like a health fair, and being out there and shaking hands with the patient. They say, and then people come to you and say, hey, you know, that's why, thank you. You took care of this. You took care of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was, or I love North Atlanta Urgent Care and getting that feedback, but also seeing the smile and helping the community. And so we've been able to incorporate that. And I noticed that, you know, we utilize practices to do the same thing, our philosophy. And I know, Elaine, that your practice is the same thing. That's why, you know, we're proud to have trust that, you know, our patients for your care.
I appreciate that.
That we have. And you know, you take care of our patients almost daily. And our patients, you know, they come back and say, wow, what an experience I had with Dr. George. And they say that over our specialists. Because, you know, they have the same philosophy. How do we take care better of the patient?
Well, I think we're both on the same wavelength. We love what we do, but we don't want a middleman dictating to us and putting us at odds with our patients. And I think if doctors and patients actually were more attuned to the fact that we're being made to become adversaries, not because it's natural, but because all these pressures are superimposed on us. Patients are paying
right.
huge premiums, huge deductibles, huge co-insurance, and I know that you don't have the problem because you have a flat rate, which is awesome. But I can't tell you the people who come to my practice who they have a copay, but because I'm a specialist, it engages their deductible. It's because of how the insurance is set up. It's not a surgery, but anything I do past using a tongue depressor in some of these instances, they're going to get dinged for a bigger charge. And you hurt for them. You really do. You can't do what you want, what the patient wants and needs to get done. And it's getting increasingly more difficult to do that. And it's like they're paying into a system, but they're not getting their money back at all. And now it's going to be mandated that you pay into the system and have a $2,000 deductible. And I don't think folks see this as they think they're getting health care when they have health insurance. But we just discussed in the last 50 minutes that it's not equal. You can have health insurance, but it doesn't mean you're going to get excellent health care. You really do have to shop around. You really do have to be savvy. And you really have to start talking with your physician. Now, I know after speaking with you and seeing your patients at length, thank you for the business, by the way, that you talk to your patients. They actually are educated. They're not treated like they're dumb. You know, they actually have investment in their care, which to me is the most important part about the doctor-patient relationship. I respect my patient as you do yours. Their time is important. Their health is important. It's not just a money maker. It's not just a cost center for you. And when patients decide that they don't want to be that anymore, that's when the system will improve. So it's not just us, but it's also the patients that need to be savvy and aggressive and decide, I'm not going to be treated like dirt and pay for the privilege. I'm going to go someplace and be treated like a human being. That's the difference. I'm so blessed that you're able to come on the show today because people need to know that they don't have to settle. And I think you've given us a great overview of what's really about, what medicine is about still, if you take the time to look for it. And you guys have three different locations. And I have to give another little, disclosure. My producer had an issue medically, and he asked me who he should go to. And the first person I thought about was North Atlanta Urgent Care, and he had a fabulous experience. I mean, he raved about it. And he's one of the people that wanted me to, you have to have them on the show, because he had such a fantastic experience, he wanted to share that. And, you know, you just don't talk about it. But I'm here to say that you are what you say you are. And a lot of people, it's all about, you're right, the glitz, the marketing, you know, the front. It's not about that. It's about the substance. And you definitely have that, Anthony. I'm really proud to be working with you, and I look forward to continuing doing so.
No, thank you, Elaine. I just want to add another disclosure, your listeners, that to make sure that all our people that we refer to, like the MRI companies, and especially you, we have no financial stake in place, meaning like we do not get the payback, what they call what a payback's, whatever it's called. But any of our, we do not get any kind of monetary incentive to send you the patient or this orthopedics clinic or this surgeon. It's strictly, hey, who's the best doctor I can send my patient to, which, unlike corporate medicine, if they refer to certain hospitals, those physicians, they do have incentives to the physicians are giving, if they're affiliated with a hospital, incentives to refer to within that hospital system or to that ER. And just want your listeners to know that we give no financial incentives here between you and I or any of our referral places.
Dr. George, I'm going to have to interrupt you all. We're out of time. Both doctors, I appreciate it. Dr. George, it was great. And I'm the one she was talking about, and you all have a great, great operation there, doctor. So
thank you.
But we have to go. We're out of time.
So, Dave, Anthony, for 1 second, give us your number that people can reach you.
They can reach at North Atlanta Urgent Care, our main office number, 404. 327-8744, or you can go to our website, atlantaurgentcare.com or nauc.net.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Anthony, for being with us today. You are awesome. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Anytime. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Dr. George.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.